You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national. We cover down on all of the issues. And like that dude just said, we are solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hey, it's Friday. So you gotta hit the, the explosion
it's
we use, right?
Explosion.
Yeah. It's Friday. Good on you. Hey, Booms, how you doing?
Hey, good. I'm doing good. It's an okay day today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just
I'm not
okay?
gonna lie to you. It's just an okay day.
What the heck, man?
You know, it's just okay.
Do you need a happy? Do you need a hug?
Oh,
what?
Hugs are good.
I know what you need. You need some beaver nuggets from Buc-ee's. That's what
beaver
you need.
Beaver nuggets. Yeah, we were just talking. And I may be going up to Nashville this weekend, and I'm probably gonna stop by Buc-ee's.
I'm pretty sure you have to. As much as we've talked about it on the show, you'd think they're one of our advertisers.
I know. We're probably going to have to get them as an advertiser.
I'm saying beaver nuggets.
Some jerky.
Get some jerky. Get some of that pulled pork barbecue.
Mm.
Dang.
Yes.
Yeah, and they got what else did they have? They had something else I was about to say. I forgot what it was. I remember having it there one time thinking, this is like worth driving here for. Anyway, it's all good.
Well, are you good? You're good.
I'm good.
You're good. Hey. You're good.
All right, and we got a good show, too.
Yes.
Good show. So, 3 o'clock today, my friend Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty will be calling in. Matt has just written a new piece that came out in 1819 News this morning about a major case before the Supreme Court, and it's going to fit right into today's Triple Dipper. So I texted him, by the way, people who come on the show oftentimes get texts from me at, 6 in the morning. Hey, saw your article. You want to come on? They're probably waking up going, why is he texting me at 6 in the morning? I'll tell you why, because I get up at 4:30, so why not? But anyway, my apologies, Matt Clark, for the early text. But he'll be on at 3 o'clock, so that's great. And then I got a triple dipper, bar none, so hit it, buddy.
The triple dipper. 3 stories you've got to know.
That's right, the triple dipper. 3 stories, 3 themes, if you will, that we're going to run today's show on. Number one, I'm calling it judicial review. So there's a bunch of cases that are coming down in different capacities. Some are going to the Supreme Court. Some are coming from the Supreme Court. Some are coming from the federal district courts. And one that I've got comes from the state appeals court in California. A variety of decisions dealing with civil liberties, with things like vaccine mandates, and all of it's worth taking a look at. So number one, judicial review, which we'll also cap off with that conversation with Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. All right, there's that. Number two, the anti-U.S. agenda. So I did a monologue a while back. I can't remember how long it's been, where I compared the fall of Rome to what we're looking at right now in current culture from the left-wing progressives. And it's amazingly too similar. You know what I'm saying? Well, just yesterday, somebody who I had just admire his writings and his punditry is Victor Davis Hanson wrote a piece that came out that literally talks about what it would take to bring down the U.S. And he labels all the things you would have to do, which are trying to be done or are being done as we speak. Looks a lot like what I'm going to break all that down for you. Number two on the triple dipper, the anti-U.S. agenda. And then number three, stand by, brethren, because we're going to dig in deep. Kakistocracy. You know that word, kakistocracy. It's the word we discovered not long ago that literally is a word in the English language. Starts with a K, kakistocracy. A government run by the least competent of its citizens. Oh, my gosh. So we're going to...
Yes.
Kakistocracy.
Kakistocracy.
There it is. All right. Hey, let me jump over to my comments and open the show with my monologue. So, listen, words are important. And so this is... If I had to give this a title, I'm calling it What's in a Word. Words are important. Words matter. And the delivery of those words also matters. A good speech or a great presentation is often more than just the words themselves. It's about timing, content, delivery, style, volume, and yes, the actual words themselves. But sometimes you got to watch it because it also matters that the folks on the receiving end can hear the words in the manner in which they were intended. Like, for instance, in both Iraq and Afghanistan, I worked with interpreters daily. I learned to speak in short sentences using words that had plain meaning so they would come out right. But I also remember once at our safe house in Afghanistan, I was having to deliver a serious butt chew into our Afghan guards. We had these 12 Mujahideen Afghan guards who lived with us. They were our personal protection force, and there had been some serious infractions in the discipline that could not be tolerated. So I had them lined up to receive my words, but I noticed that as animated as I was, that the delivery from my interpreter seemed like almost apologetic. So I stopped and I looked at him and I told him that he was my mouthpiece and that if I was mad, he had to be mad. And if I was yelling, he had to be yelling. And if I softened up my tone, then he could as well. Well, let me tell you, man, it changed the whole dynamic. And let's just say my Mujahideen guards, they got the point then. You see, that issue, though, was one less of translation. It was more about delivery. But, man, I had a situation once where the words did not make it through to the understanding of the listeners. Listen, so here's the deal. I've told this story before, but just bear with me because it's worth telling again. In one of those moments that my family still laughs about, I had my words ridiculously misconstrued. So coming home from Afghanistan at the beginning of the war made me like somewhat of a novelty around town. And over time, the idea of deployed soldiers became perhaps too normal. But when I got back from my first tour, I was among the first people that many people had met that had been downrange. So I was asked to give comments to various news and information outlets. I was called upon to give speeches, and one of those times was far more low-key than most when my own sweet mother-in-law asked if I would please speak to the ladies in her garden club. Well, that's not normal speaking fare for an Army Ranger, but I love my mom-in-law. So, of course, I said yes, and I arrived on the day of the meeting to a small group of wonderful blue-haired grandmothers who listened intently while they ate their finger sandwiches and fruit cups. And I noticed the one little lady sat to my right with a stubby pencil and a notepad, taking copious notes. Because, see, apparently, every month, the doings of the Edenwood Garden Club, well, they were dutifully reported to the Gadsden Times local events section. Cool. Well, one of the ladies asked if I had ever had reason to have to encourage my men, and what did I say? Well, truthfully, yes. I told the ladies that several times I reminded my team about one of my favorite passages of Scripture, Psalm 91. Sometimes called the soldier's psalm. It speaks of protection from harm and the protection from Almighty God. I even have it inscribed on the side of a ring that I'm wearing right now. But somehow, the Garden Club scribe heard something totally different and was proud to report to all God's children in the local newspaper that when times got rough, I would read poetry to my men. Poetry to my men! So my family laughs to this day about that. Luckily, no one has called me to turn in my man card. So yes, words matter, and how the words are spoken matter, and how the words are received also matters. All right, but as I mentioned earlier, it's also just as important that a speech or a sermon or a reporting or a poem even, that its timing is just as relevant to the impact that it has. Because for words to have a true impact, they have to fit the times and the needs of the listener. Anything less is just empty rhetoric that serves no purpose other than to check a block. A leader, a good leader, is one who knows how to size up the moment that he or she is in, assess the needs of his or her people, and address the times that they are in with words that not only resonate, but also provide meaning and provide hope and provide inspiration. Sometimes they just speak to a person. Sometimes they can galvanize a whole nation. When Abraham Lincoln gave the Gettysburg Address, he was not even scheduled that day as the keynote speaker. A guy named Edward Everett, who history has forgotten about, was the chief presenter. He delivered, Everett did, nearly a 14,000-word speech that lasted for 2 hours. And when he was done, Lincoln stood up. And in just over 400 words, just 10 sentences, he succinctly addressed the moment and the people in what became known as the Gettysburg Address. He stole the show. He rallied the nation. Because what he said was important at just the right time. In 1910, just a few years before World War I, Teddy Roosevelt delivered one of his most famous speeches, which is often called The Man in the Arena. 110 years later, it is still one of the most quoted speeches, capable to this day of rousing people from fear of failure and moving them to action. So that, quote, their place would never be to live with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. I actually have a copy of that speech in the front of my Bible. In the early 60s, when the nation was reeling from the loss of John F. Kennedy and entering into Vietnam, a burgeoning shift in politics was taking place. Barry Goldwater was the top of the ticket in a divided Republican Party. But the stage was completely stolen when Ronald Reagan gave a landmark speech that many today still call a rendezvous with destiny. It spoke across party lines. It rallied the base. It galvanized all ages to a sense of hope in who we are as a nation, and it labeled the common threat of communism that we need to pay attention to. And it was the basis, really, for what became the Reagan Doctrine during his presidency. On a personal note, I have sat through countless sermons in my life that did not stir me or speak to me a bit. They were often cold, they were perfunctory, they didn't move my heart at all. But to this day, I have a sermon from my pastor in the early 90s. It's called Jonathan and His Armor Bearer, and I remember the first time I heard it. I could still hear his voice as he delivered it, getting all stirred up, talking about the value of just getting started on what God may be calling you to. Just start, he yelled. Oh my God, that more men would just start. I listened to it to this day about once a year. In fact, I think I'm due to listen to it again. So why does all this matter? Why am I telling you this? Why am I talking about words? Because I don't see that same kind of impassioned delivery in much of anything from our society's leaders right now. That's why. We just came through a millennial pandemic. We're in the middle of a period of great social upheaval, which has been really rough and burning down buildings in the last few years. We have seen a reckless and devastating pullout from Afghanistan after losing much blood and treasure there. We have been in a time and are in a time of economic uncertainty, and the people of this nation need a leader who will look them in the eye, recognize where they are, and deliver words that will actually inspire, motivate, uplift, empower the greater good. I've said before on this show, I once met former Texas Governor Rick Perry when he was running for president. I told him I was looking for a God-fearing gunslinger. He said, I'm both of those. That was words I needed to hear and words that we all need to hear right now. So listen, man, from our elected officials, no more milquetoast, no more go along to get along, no more slow, methodical, meaningless speeches, and no more speeches where you stand up there in front of a red background and blame half the nation for what the other nation doesn't like. Words matter. Words that mean something. Words that are delivered in a timely, meaningful, intentional, and inspiring manner. Words that, when they are converted to action, can actually save a nation. Words matter. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. There you have it. I'm serious. I mean, several things in there. Number one, I think I am due to go and listen to that sermon again, Jonathan and His Armor Bearer. Maybe I need to tell that story later, but it was, to this day, it inspires me to just remember that sometimes just getting started is what it takes. And then the other thing about reading poetry to my man, I did not read poetry to my man. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative and just plain right. Well, man, we're going to get into that number one of the Triple Dipper here in a few minutes. And it's amazing what kind of things are happening. And I think the reason why the courts have been so active is because there have been so many things that have been happening from the Biden administration that have just put things into a position where they have to go to court to determine what's right and what's wrong. It's just amazing. I mean, when have you ever seen so many things getting litigated? Vaccine mandates, you know, Trump raid on his personal residence, what's happened with January 6th, you know, all it just on and on and on, over and over again. Federal overreach in a variety of ways. How do we deal with it? Lord. So, yeah, we're going to talk about that here in just a few minutes. Boomer?
Yeah.
So, coming Monday.
Yeah, Monday.
Monday, I'm bringing you donuts.
Monday,
I'm bringing you donuts. Woo-hoo. And doing some push-ups, my brother. And so I'm going to get you a box of normal and glazed.
A box?
Well, I mean, I can't just shortchange you. You've won the bet. Unless, by the way, the keep in mind. So those of y'all that are just catching up right now, Boomer and I have a running bet. Our podcast, we do the show live every day, 3 hours a day, and then a bunch of y'all to include our second biggest audience being in California. Hello, California.
Yes, California.
We love you on the left coast. Just hang in. Hold the fort. And by the way, you're welcome here in Alabama. We'll take you. I know a bunch of California refugees, by the way, that live here in Alabama now.
Nice.
But yeah, so I expected us to hit 100,000 downloads of the podcast version of the show, which is, you know, we put up the show every day after it's over with. Like yesterday's interview with Stephen Curtis Chapman is now up there if you want to go get it.
Yep.
I just barely missed the mark. Barely.
Barely.
It's 'cause of that dadgum Thanksgiving holiday. Didn't think about that. But anyway, so I'm going to bring you donuts. He's going to eat donuts while I do push-ups. That's the goal. But, Booms, you got till the 10th.
I have till the 10th.
You're going to make it, though.
I'll make it. But, I mean, it's just next week. That's it. Saturday.
What day? It's the 10th. It's Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Next Saturday, so a week from tomorrow.
I think Saturday is the day that I've been asked to attend the Vulcan chapter of the 82nd Airborne Association's annual dinner, which I'm pretty stoked about.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So I'm going to be there that night, the lovely Charlene and I.
Sweet.
Which I'll be able to say that even though she does not wear airborne wings, that they did call her the Sergeant Major. My team referred to her as a Sergeant Major because they knew that she was the only one who could say whatever I needed to hear.
That's right.
Yes, indeed. All right.
Man, that's good. Well, I'm excited about those donuts.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad. What number are we at? Did you just check a minute ago?
Yes, we're at 97, almost 900. So we had about 400.
Yep.
Since yesterday,
I think we had more like 600 from yesterday.
Maybe it's like 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Because I didn't count the rest of yesterday's.
Wow. Cool. All right. Yeah. Well, and the interview, I got feedback from folks, even offline about the Stephen Curtis Chapman interview. I don't know if you heard from anybody or not.
Oh, I did. A few people from just friends and family that I ran into yesterday and were texting me. They're like, wow, that was just awesome and powerful.
Yeah, it was very cool. I was talking to one guy yesterday, this morning, and he said, how do you get these names? And I said, man, we're just blessed with connectivity. And we've had some of them just come through listeners.
Yeah.
Of course, you've had a longstanding connection to Stephen Curtis Chapman, but then Ted Nugent came through a listener.
That's crazy.
Buzz Patterson came through a listener. General Boykin, I already knew him, and that was great to pull him in. But anyway, lots of good stuff happening on Right Side Radio.
Can't wait to get some more people in here.
We're doing it. We're working right now. We got some irons in the fire.
That's right.
By the way, 3 o'clock. Stay tuned because he hadn't been on with us in a while. I guess he's been busy doing lawyer things. But my friend Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty will be on at 3 to kind of put a capstone on a discussion we're about to have that I'm calling judicial review. So, yep, number one of the triple dipper, there's a bunch of stuff happening out there in the court system. Why? Because the Biden administration is ate up like a soup sandwich, that's why, and you got to go to court to prove it. But this is what the founders meant when they said, you know, basically that we needed a 3 co-equal branches of government. Congress is supposed to pass the laws. The executive should enforce the laws. And judicial review, by the judicial branch, is supposed to determine whether those laws meet muster with constitutionality and fairness and all. All right, folks. Judicial review coming up next. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. All you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Hey, And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, listen, text lines are open, 833-687-4448. You want to text on in, we'll take it. And boy, they're already lit up. So a couple things just to do before I start the dipper. Frank from Huntsville just texted in with a question. He goes, did we hear anything yet about Huntsville getting Space Force? I covered that a few days ago, and I double-checked again when I saw his text. As of right now, the most recent report is still that one I had 2 days ago, saying that the decision is still pending and the Air Force Secretary has it now. So it's big doings. We're waiting for Space Command to get its final announcement. I mean, there's no reason why it can't come to Alabama. There's really no reason. They have no good reason to change it. It'd be purely political if they do. So I think it's going to be here. Boomer, just so you know, I already rejected this. Firmly, without unequivocally.
All right,
but
what's that?
Paul from Athens says, since I lost the bet, I have to wear your Alabama cap, and I ain't doing it. I'd rather have somebody say I read poetry to my men in Afghanistan than have to wear your smelly old Alabama hat. Just so you know.
Thanks. It is pretty ratty, but I like it.
there you go. With regards to the story in my monologue about Jim from Madison just texted in and said, Phil Williams, warrior poet and wooer of old ladies. God almighty. Awesome. He said, but somehow he still cannot finish a triple dipper. I finished it yesterday. Thank you very much. That's Jim from Madison, who's both an OIF and OEF vet. Thank you for your service, sir. Thank you for your service.
And Paul's ragging on your triple dipper as well.
Oh,
just letting you know.
Is he? Okay. What do you do?
Yeah.
What do you do? I love my audience. I love my audience. This is where at my house somebody will look at the other one and go, well, I just want you to know I love you in spite of yourself. That's where. All right. Hey, listen, judicial review. That's number one of the triple dipper. Judicial review. What I'm saying is there are things out there right now in the legal world that are, they're actually big doings. I mean, stuff happens every day. Here at the local level, I'll be in court next week for a client. I've got things that I'm still working on, legally speaking. There's always something going before the Supreme Court, always something going for the state Supreme Courts, always something at an appellate level. But every once in a while, they're more like headline cases. And the term to look for is sometimes they become what are known as landmark cases or landmark rulings. The Dobbs decision most recently this year that overturned Roe v. Wade. Roe was a prior landmark case, which has now been overturned by Dobbs, which is a new landmark decision. It's that place where things have happened that truly impact society. Well, there's a lot of things happening right now that just deal with stuff that we've been watching and paying attention to, talking about on the show even. Like, for instance, President Biden has his plan that he knows he's not, I mean, he knows he can't just willy-nilly pay off everybody's student loan debt like he wants to. It doesn't work that way. The whole co-equal branches of government thing, Mr. President, you know better. Story here on National Review, dated yesterday. It says, against President Biden's executive despotism. Since August, it says, President Joe Biden, the restorer of norms in our nation, has 1, issued an executive order he knew full well was illegal, 2, altered the illegal executive order in an attempt to avoid judicial review, 3, asked the courts to allow him to proceed with his illegal executive order so that by the time it is inevitably struck down, the case will be rendered moot. Nope. This week, the courts have justly told him to just put it where the sun don't shine. So yesterday, the Fifth Circuit refused to lift its stay while the case is pending. And then here's how Axios described it. A Texas judge's ruling blocking its student debt relief program was denied by a federal appeals court on Wednesday night. There's that. The Biden administration has announced that it would appeal the decision of the Fifth Circuit. Today, this is yesterday's report, today the Supreme Court responded to that appeal by blocking the order until oral arguments could be held in February. So what this basically means is this. Biden's trying to pay off student loan debt. He doesn't have the authority. Why? Because Congress never granted him that authority. He's trying to, and of course, here's an article I've got on the same topic from CNN. CNN points out, rightfully so, that Biden is attempting to rely upon the HEROES Act, the Higher Education Relief Opportunities for Students Act of 2003, which was never meant for this purpose. He's trying to claim that the pandemic, which he's already said is over, gives him the authority to provide extraordinary relief, like paying off somebody's student loan debt. Well, this is a gross abuse of the system. When you've got, literally, when you've got an opportunity for a president to just be, you know, the guy who decides what's constitutionally allowable, and, oh, by the way, do what Congress is supposed to do, which is the power of the purse, and then sign the executive order, well, at that point, we have a king. We don't have a president. Well, the courts are saying no. Now, listen, I got to tell you, too, I'm amazed. I shouldn't be, but I'm amazed. I'm amazed by the Biden administration's Solicitor General Elizabeth Preligar, when she was before the Supreme Court on this issue, asking that they allow for the injunction to be lifted. Now, first of all, by the way, this is still going to go forward for now. They're still going to have a trial on the merits. What they've done so far is what's called a preliminary injunction. They have stopped it from happening until they can have the actual case to determine whether it should happen or not. What you don't want to do is spend hundreds and hundreds of millions, perhaps billions, of tax dollars while it takes 3 years to conduct a case, only to find out later on, maybe you shouldn't have spent those tax dollars after all, and then they're already spent. No. You stop it in its tracks. You maintain the status quo. That's what they're saying. An injunction does. It maintains the status quo and prevents further harm, irreparable harm, and you go forward with the case and then decide what to do. Well, Biden's argument in court was, by leaving this injunction in place, it, quote, you ready for this? It leaves millions of economically vulnerable borrowers in limbo, uncertain about the size of their debt, and unable to make financial decisions with an accurate understanding of their future repayment obligations. That's the biggest load of crap I have ever heard in my life. They signed up for a loan. They're making payments or they're not. They know what the size of their debt is. They know whether they can afford a pizza tomorrow or not. They know how to, I hope they know how to balance their checkbook. The reality is this. You cannot say, poor, poor people, they took out a loan and signed up for it, and they got the benefit of it. And it's a contractual obligation, but we should relieve them because now they're economically vulnerable. That's the biggest, and all that in a participation trophy, too. There you go. All right, next story. Trump lost in a recent court action. All right, so this just happened. All right, this storyline on Reuters dated yesterday. U.S. Appeals Court rules against Trump and documents fight ends the arbiter. So what happened is this. You remember the raid on Mar-a-Lago, which I still think was egregious. I mean, this is unheard of. This is a presidential candidate, a former president of the United States, who had been, by the way, negotiating with the FBI about documents and did exactly what they said, which is put him under lock and key. And what did they do? They raided his house. Knowing full well he wasn't home, they raided his house, and they seized a whole lot more than just the documents that were in that that room. In the course of it, they find some that are marked secret or top secret. I don't know which. And the argument that I have is that the President of the United States is the ultimate determiner as to what is considered classified or not. So, Mr. President, if you have a document out there that says, here's where I signed off on declassifying those things, you better pull it out of your hat. But right now, he has that authority. Hopefully he acted on it correctly. But what he first asked was, stop what you're doing. You should not be allowed to pursue this investigation with me until someone, a independent third party, has reviewed these documents to make sure they really fit the bill. Well, originally it was said, okay, we'll have a third party special master, they call it, to review the documents, just to determine whether or not there is something there that needs to be considered a part of an investigation. Well, a three-judge 11th Circuit panel said yesterday that the lower court judge lacked the authority to have granted that request, and basically overturned the decision to bar investigators from being able to access the records while the review is still pending. So the bottom line is this. The FBI is going to get to go through all the documents, which they've already been doing, I guarantee you. They've already photocopied every single one of them, scanned them, and sat around having a s'mores around the campfire while they just look through them all. They seize 11,000 records, including about 100 that are marked classified. The 11th Circuit said that while a search warrant for a former president's property is extraordinary, it did not give, quote, the judiciary license to interfere in an ongoing investigation. The law is clear. We cannot write a rule that allows any subject of a search warrant to block government investigations after the execution of the warrant. A member of that three-judge panel, Judge William Pryor from Alabama, a typically very conservative jurist, appointed by Bush. He is sitting on the 11th Circuit. Trump is likely to appeal. There's that. Judicial review. I mean, these are things that are impacting us on a daily basis. I'm about to get into some about vaccine mandates. And then top of the hour, we'll be talking to my friend Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty about a case before the Supreme Court right now. In the meantime, Boomer, let's go ahead and take the break. It is that time. We'll take the break right now. We'll come right back. Number one of the Triple Dipper, judicial review. What's happening in the court systems? What are they saying? Oh, hey, Air Force, how about that vaccine mandate? I'll tell you about it in a minute. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. Well, hey, listen, by the way, we got a bunch of texters telling us that audio just went off on one of our stations, so we appreciate that. Listen, we have a remote studio. It's at one of the stations. They're working the issue right now, so we're going to keep talking like the show is on. And for those of y'all that might be experiencing difficulties, we apologize. But all will be good here shortly. I'm in number one of the Triple Dipper. Judicial review. Well, I'll tell you what, one of the things that is getting a lot of judicial review is the Biden vaccine mandates. I mean, it's in whatever category. We had so many different versions of mandates. We had, of course, we had the military mandate, which is still the only one left standing, I think. No, I take it back. There's also the healthcare worker mandate, which is, there's no reason for it. We had mandates in federal contractors. We had mandates in private employers. We had it was across the board. It was one of the biggest and most egregious overreaches of governance that I've ever seen. Well, most of it just got slapped down. Some of it's still out there. Story here on Fox News dated November 29th. So what, 3 days ago, 4 days ago? And by the way, thank you, Boomer. I see that. So we're good. And the Birmingham stations are all good. So we're checking that. I think the issue is in our WVNN Huntsville affiliate. We're working it. But anyway, story on FoxNews.com. Appeals court says the Air Force wrongly relied on a broad formula to deny religious objections. So here's the deal. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals on Tuesday upheld an injunction protecting unvaccinated Air Force service members from being punished. The bottom line is this, y'all. The court said they found what they called generalized assessments of religious accommodation requests as opposed to what are supposed to be individualized assessments, meaning blanket denials. That's what it means. The court said the Air Force had an unlawful uniform practice of denying religious exemptions to anyone who wants to remain in the service. This is asinine. And by the way, do I fault the military leaders? Yeah. But they were also being forced into an untenable position. The civilian sector of the military oversight was forcing the issue down upon the green suitor leadership and telling them, you will do it this way and you will just deny them. And that's not the way it's supposed to work. Religious accommodation is supposed to be an individualized review with a case-by-case basis of every single one of them. And right now, there's 10,000 unvaccinated active duty reserve and National Guard, Air Force, and Space Force members who are pending religious exemption requests who are just denied, just blanket denials. It's not supposed to happen that way. And the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld an injunction that prevents any of those Air Force members from receiving any punishment for it. Now, listen, I will tell you, too, this is going to keep going. right now, it's not quite judicial. It's legislative. But I will tell you this, that in regards to the vaccine mandate still being fought in court, and the overwhelming response that we're seeing in the court system to recognizing this was an overreach, Congress is saying that once the Republicans take charge, they are going to make sure that they do all they can to have that vaccine mandate on the military also rescinded. It makes no sense that all of society is getting back to normal and that they don't have the mandates anymore. And the one place in our nation where we are still enforcing it virtually arbitrarily now, it would seem, is in the military. So the courts are winning. We're winning in the courts on the question of civilian sector, where we're not seeing enough. We are seeing injunctions, but we're not seeing enough total relief is on the vaccine mandate for the military. But several Republicans, according to NBC News, dated November 30th, several Republicans are warning they will drag out the Senate considerations of a massive military policy bill unless they get a vote on ending a COVID vaccine mandate for service members. Seven senators said they would withhold any quick consideration of the National Defense Authorization Act if they're not allowed a floor vote on their proposal. Rand Paul's leading the charge on this. Senator Lindsey Graham, Senator Ted Cruz, Senator Ron Johnson, and others, and Rick Scott, all saying enough's enough. We've got injunctions in place right now. The courts are agreeing. You can't just do this in the way they've been doing it. We're winning in every other capacity in the courts. Why would you not? All right. Last one I've got for you before we get Matt Clark on here. Court rejects, this is Fox News again, November 25th. So this is about a week ago. Court rejects San Diego School District's COVID vaccine mandate. The California 4th District Court of Appeals ruled against the San Diego Unified School District's COVID-19. Now, can you imagine? Can you imagine this? In San Diego, the school district just decided arbitrarily, we're going to have our own COVID mandate. You can't come to school. What? Yeah, you can't come to school. Here's their argument. They said that they were allowed to do this because it was not really a mandate, because the option was for students to do an at-home independent study if they chose not to get their shots. Yeah, okay. So yeah, you're not allowed to participate in sports. You can't get the quality education that a classroom provides. We'll let you log in online, you know. And if we let you log in online, hey, it's not really a mandate then, is it? Knuckleheads. Well, the California 4th District Court of Appeals ruled against them. On Tuesday, the appellate court agreed with a lower court ruling that said the school district does not even have the authority to establish its own mandate. Yay! This was not even an injunction. This is a smackdown. This is like saying, hey, what were you thinking? I mean, like, not for nothing here, but what are you thinking? So in May, they said, we're going to do our own mandate because that's who we are. And now here we are in November. They should be done. They are weighing out whether or not they want to appeal this further, the school district. But right now, why would you? Because apparently the kids are in school, and they have been all along. And, oh, by the way, the system didn't come to a screeching halt. And hospitals are not overrun. And life is continuing. And yet you want to appeal it. And maybe a year from now, try to see if you can get them thrown out of school again. Knuckleheads. And these are people in charge of school districts. These people get elected, by the way. I assume they are. They might be appointed. Either way, wow. All right, listen. Coming back in a minute after the break, and we'll be checking to make sure that all of our tech is back online at the Huntsville affiliates. It's on here in the right side of the studio. We know that, right, Booms?
We're good here, and we also have our live video video cast. So if they can't tune in, they can go to the website as well right now.
Oh,
and pull it up,
perfect.
And so they can listen that way as well.
I should have said that earlier. That's why you get paid to be here to keep me on track. All right. Folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, coming back with Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. You guys stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, the local, the state, the national. We cover down on all the issues. And yes, we are, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, hey, technical difficulties appear to have been resolved at our Huntsville affiliates. For those of y'all that texted us and gave us the highlight that, hey, you're off the air, we appreciate it. Thank you very much. Don't ever be afraid to tell us because, you know, we're in our studio. Right Side has its own studio. We are a standalone business. We basically operate as such, and we send our signal out to other stations. So apparently one of our stations had some technical difficulties on their end. They now have it resolved. And for all practical purposes, it appears that we are up and running. So I just hate that some of y'all had to miss some just enlightening verbiage. But anyway, hey, listen, we're going to go right now to the phones. My friend Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty, he is also right now a professor at Faulkner University's pre-law program. He has really got a great resume to include not just his degree from Liberty University, but also having clerked at the state Supreme Court. And Matt is one of those guys who gets in there and dukes it out on issues of constitutionality and civil liberties and things that just matter to you and I in a broad sense, even at the Supreme Court level. Right now, he's got a piece he wrote in 1819 News that just came out today. I wanted to break it down with him. So let's bring him on. Matt Clark, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, Phil, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good, sir. I'm good. Hey, listen, man, I'm doing a segment right now. I think I told you this morning called Judicial Review. I just went through several stories, vaccine mandates being enjoined, Trump not being allowed to have a special master to review documents seized at Mar-a-Lago, just a variety of things. But one of them that caught my eye that got this started was you wrote a piece that came out today in 1819 News about a case that I've really not been tracking. Called 303 Creative versus Elenis. Tell us why this matters and what it's about.
Sure, absolutely. So, honestly, probably unless you're, you know, like really, you know, following everything that's going on in the constitutional law world, like, you know, like me, most people probably haven't heard of this. But this is another case that's arising out of Colorado, which strangely has kind of been the epicenter of a lot of these clashes between the LGBT agenda and religious liberty. And what's happening in this case is you've got a Christian creative professional named Lori Smith who creates custom websites for couples that are getting married to help them celebrate and promote their weddings. Honestly, Phil, I didn't even know that this was a thing until I got, you know, engaged a few years ago. And my now wife is like, hey, we have this thing called the knot. Like,
oh, yeah. Listen, my daughter just got married, and I can tell you there's all kinds of things we didn't have to do back when Charlene and I got married 37 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. This is kind of new to me, too. I mean, I knew I was going to be a dinosaur one day. I just didn't know it was going to happen at 35, but here I am. So, but anyways, but she uses her artistic talents to do this. But, you know, she wants to run her business in accordance with her Christian beliefs. So she had a statement on her website saying, hey, listen, I'm a Christian. Because of that, I simply can't engage in any conduct with this business that violates what the Bible teaches. And one of those things is that marriage is a union between a man and a woman. So it's like, if you're gay, I got nothing but love for you. I just can't, you know, use my platform to help celebrate that wedding. So state of Colorado had a problem with that. So they got into a big lawsuit over it. And the lower courts have pretty much told her, you got to bow the knee and do it anyway if you want to stay in business. So she's represented by Alliance Defending Freedom. They asked the U.S. Supreme Court to take her case, and the court agreed. So that case is actually set to be argued on Monday morning. And interestingly, Phil, the primary issue in this case is not free exercise of religion, but freedom of speech. As I explained in the op-ed, you know, this probably doesn't make a lot of sense to people who aren't lawyers, and that's because folks like you and I have had our minds warped by law for you know, many years. And it goes to show, you know, if the average person's ears and is like, hang on, isn't this religious freedom? And the U.S. Supreme Court says no, then the Supreme Court needs to fix this free exercise jurisprudence. But since they haven't done that, we kind of have to find a back door into fighting for religious freedom. And for a few years now, freedom of speech has been that back door, and we've actually had a lot of success at that. Quickly, the reason is, you know, the Supreme Court, one of the few things that conservative and liberal justices have been able to agree on over the years has been that, number one, the government should not crack down on you because it does not like what you say.
Yeah.
And number two, and the number two is that it should not force you to try to speak a message that you disagree with. So when you combine those two things and apply them here, you know, the question is, isn't that exactly what the state of Colorado is trying to do to Ms. Smith? And isn't that what, you know, a lot of these laws are trying to do to Christian creative professionals across the country?
Hey, Matt, yeah. let me jump in and ask you real quick, too, because I don't know the answer here. The case is styled as 303 Creative, which I assume is Lori Smith's company, versus mm-hmm. Elanus. Now, is Elanus, was there an actual potential customer who felt aggrieved by this and sued? Or is the state of Colorado coming in and they had to find a plaintiff? What happened here?
So Elanus is the head of the Colorado Civil Rights Commission.
Ah.
One of those. Yeah, it's one of the things, instead of suing like the commission as a whole, you kind of have to sue the head of it in their official capacity. You know, so it's, again, for the non-lawyers here, this is a way to sue the government without explicitly saying you're suing the government. Why? Because that would be too commonsensical, and you know, the law doesn't always comport with common sense.
Gotcha.
But so, you know, the fight is between Ms. Smith and the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Like I said, free speech has been on a huge winning streak, and because of that, especially with the court's recent decisions about compelled speech, saying, you know, it's especially egregious to try to force someone to say something that they fundamentally disagree with. I think, you know, I would be shocked if we don't see the five conservatives at least locking shields on this and sticking together. And as unpredictable as he can be, I think Chief Justice Roberts is probably going to be with us on this one, too. So, but if Smith wins, this is going to be a huge win for not only freedom of speech, but really religious liberty in an indirect way.
Yeah, and I look at it, too, and I think, you know, how can there be a harm here? I mean, the thing that drives me crazy in these cases, much like the cake baker case, which I've forgotten the name of it. You may know the name of that one.
Jack Phillips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. In very similar circumstances, except that he actually had someone that walked in saying, we'd like to order a cake. And he said, I'm sorry, I can't. And in this case, you've got the state of Colorado just jumping in there and trying to you know, enforce something. But the reality is this: there is no way in the world you can justify the idea that there's not another website designer or another cake baker or another florist right down the street who could provide for you the same level of service and continuity that you would have had you not felt compelled to go to the Christian baker or the Christian florist. It's hard to find true damages here, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And that to me is one of the most egregious aspects of these lawsuits, is not only are they violating the rights of the individual baker or florist or whatever, but they're pretending that they actually have a true grievance when everyone knows they could go to a florist down the street who doesn't care.
Yeah, bingo. You're absolutely right, Phil. So I agree with you on that completely. You know, it's interesting. In the court below, here's something that's just so shocking about this, is apparently Smith, the way that she does these custom websites is a little bit differently than the way it's typically done. Imagine that. An artist has a unique way of doing things, right?
Right.
I can't remember the specific facts, but it's because she did her websites a certain way and she was the only one that did it that way. The Tenth Circuit below said, well, the fact that you have a monopoly on this way of designing websites all the more reason why we need to step in.
That's
awful.
The
stupidest thing. Yeah, it was the stupidest thing. It really was. Especially in the cyber age where, look, you know, the question is, why do you, you know, if you're in the Colorado area, why do you have to select this one where you can probably get, you know, 10 web designers from California or Washington or New York, and it's just as easy as getting that local one. So to your point, especially when it comes to the internet, and, you know, it makes the argument all the more absurd that you need this person to bow the knee. That's the age that we're living in. It's horrible.
Well, it does appear to be that's the age we're living in. Hey, I'm, by the way, before we leave and end our time with you here today, I don't know if you're tracking or not, but the Biden administration is losing left and right on the ability to actually follow through on his plans to write off student loans left and right. You've been tracking that?
Yeah, I've been following. It's great. They need to lose, but yes, I've been following.
Well, I'm curious what's going to happen. The Supreme Court declined to, allow the injunction to be lifted today, just didn't take it up, and they're going to have oral arguments, I believe, in February. Do you know for a fact? I think they are.
Yeah, they are. That's exactly right. So let me think. Yeah, I think up until this point, the Supreme Court has been hesitant to step in at the emergency stage. Justice Kagan is actually getting some success with branding that as what she calls the shadow docket, like making important decisions very fast. She's had some success persuading Chief Justice Roberts and Kavanaugh and Barrett to stay out of things until there's some final judgments, you know. So that's why the Supreme Court declined to intervene twice. But now it's finally stepping in. I think the six conservatives, and I'm including Roberts in that, are going to think that the Biden administration doing this by itself is going to violate the major question doctrine. You know, that was the grounds for shooting down the OSHA vaccine mandate, the EPA's plan to, you know, destroy our economy and our energy sector, and the CDC's eviction moratorium last year. So I think that same issue is at play. And if real quickly, if you don't know what that is, that means that if an administrative agency decides that it's going to make a decision of major political and economic significance, then Congress has clearly authorized them to do that. And here they haven't done it. So yeah. The thing is, like, you're going to get beat down for the fourth time in the row on the exact same grounds. When are you going to learn your lesson, Biden administration? So
I don't know that they will. I mean, I'll never forget the vaccine mandates. I think it was the one where Biden actually stood there at the podium and said, well, my legal advisors tell me I probably can't do this, but we're going to do it anyway. I'm like, what? I couldn't believe he said that. Vaccine mandates, he pretty much strips away his own standing by announcing that the pandemic is over, and yet he's relying upon pandemic authority for the student loan bailout. It's on and on and on.
That's one of the problems with having a kind of senile president. He says the quiet part out loud, whereas all the other politicians.
Yeah, and I'd love to know who his legal advisors are, man. But anyway. Hey, listen, thanks for unpacking that for us. Do you know when should we expect a decision to be handed down on this 303 Creative versus Alanis? Do you know?
My guess is it's going to be in June. That's usually when the Supreme Court saves their most controversial opinions, the hottest ticket opinions, and this one falls into that category. So June, probably mid to end June is what I'm thinking.
Have they already had arguments on this yet, or are they going to schedule those now?
Oh, no, it's going to be... they're holding oral argument on Monday. So
okay.
If you get the chance and you want to tune into live oral argument, feel free to listen. All right.
Hey, brother, appreciate your time. Matt Clark, Alabama Center for Law and Liberty, also a professor of pre-law at Faulkner. We appreciate you, man. Have a great day.
Sure. Thank you so much, Phil. You have a good one.
All right. Thank you, too. He always makes me feel smarter when he comes on. I just feel like I get continuing legal ed by listening to him talk. That's the way it works. Love that guy. Anyway, hey, listen, we're going to take a break right now. We're going to come right back. I'm switching to number two on the Triple Dipper, and you're going to want to hear this one. The anti-U.S. agenda. How does what we're seeing right now compare to what historians say were the factors that created the fall of Rome? Oh, shoot. Yep, you're going to want to stay tuned. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. You're back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Making it cool to be a conservative. Hey, man, there are so many things happening, by the way. Before I jump into the next part of the Triple Dipper, I gotta tell you, we just had a breaking news piece up on the TV screen in the studio here that apparently, and it's, I'm looking around trying to find a news source for it online. But apparently Elon Musk just tweeted out that he is planning to release at 4 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock Eastern, all the documents at Twitter related to the Hunter Biden laptop suppression. Oh, shoot. The pucker factor in D.C. just went up about 9 notches. I'm just saying. Yeah, boy. That's right. They're going to be having to sit on donut pillows pretty soon, looks like. But all right, so enough of that. But the reality is the world has been wanting to know, what the heck? I mean, it appears, and he's already said it, if I'm not mistaken, just the other day, Musk literally said in an interview, or perhaps in a back-and-forth tweet, I'm not sure, that there is, basically, there was electioneering on the part of Twitter during the 2020 campaign. There are many who believe right now that had the Hunter Biden story that was broken by the New York Post been allowed to run its course, that it would have prevented a lot of people from voting for Biden, or it would have driven more people to the polls for Trump. All said and done, the narrow margins of that election may well have been different had news been allowed to be news. I mean, when you're looking at a story like, I mean, stop and think about it. Those who track this know the Hunter Biden laptop. If you remember, if you haven't been tracking it, I'll just give you the quick refresh. But a guy that runs a computer repair shop, I believe it's in Delaware, had a laptop that just got abandoned there that was brought in by Hunter Biden for repair. So he's like working with it. He starts realizing, oh my gosh, there's some stuff on this laptop that I shouldn't be seeing. I need to call somebody. I mean, we're talking about, you know, photographic evidence of drug use, prostitution, emails related to international business dealings with foreign nations while his father was a vice president, the same nations his father was negotiating with. And then it got worse when you begin to realize that it was also alleging in some of those emails that, you know, perhaps Joe Biden was benefiting from his son's business dealings. All this stuff is on the laptop. What a knucklehead. I mean, that's like saying, I don't care anymore, and here's the evidence. Either A, I'm so brazen, you can't touch me, or B, I'm just a knucklehead with a complete indifference to what reality says I should care about. Either one's bad. The bottom line is the laptop story broke. It became a thing. It was turned over to the FBI. What's the FBI done with it? Pretty much nothing since then. But what also happened was immediately social media giants, Facebook, Twitter, and the others, decided to deplatform that story. It was not allowed. It was completely suppressed. And if I'm not mistaken, the New York Post even had their Twitter feed completely just taken down. And when you do something like that, when you consider that Pew Institute research shows that something like 72% of all Americans get news off of Twitter, what that basically means is they're not like, well, some are probably just reading the tweets. What I'm saying is there's any number of stories that are linked on there. And when this is shut down like that, when that's the public square and it's not allowed to go forward, could that in fact be electioneering? And I wonder, did the Biden campaign ask for it? If they did, we got an even bigger problem. More on that, and coming back with the next one of the Dippers, the anti-U.S. agenda. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. All you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
Hey
And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. I'm talking about we are way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Well, listen, I'm moving to number two of the Triple Dipper. Right before I do that, let me just make a suggestion to you, all right? So, Just Love Coffee Cafe, been with us now for quite a while. This show is about a year and a half old, and the majority of that time, Just Love Coffee Cafe has been here. So tomorrow morning is Saturday. It's going to be a pretty, you know, brisk morning in North Alabama. Let me just suggest to you that you may want something different on a Saturday morning. How about this? Instead of dirtying up the kitchen, or for that matter, just having a bowl of cereal, how about you just, you know, throw on your flannel pants and go on down to Just Love Coffee Cafe. Two locations, one on Hughes Road in Madison, the other in South Parkway in Huntsville. And I would just strongly suggest you consider looking at their breakfast menu as the thing you won't get anywhere else. Like the Womlet. It's an omelet cooked in a waffle iron that is filled with everything in the world to include tater tots. And then you've got waffles, and you've got fruit, and you've got, you know, biscuits, and you got, I mean, listen. And all that, it's Just Love Coffee Cafe. So, you know, there's the treat coffees, like Charlene calls them. You can get a cappuccino or a latte or espresso. Or for that matter, just have them grind the beans on some fresh, hot, award-winning dry roast coffee. Listen, Just Love Coffee Cafe. Check it out for your Saturday morning. I think you'll enjoy it. And tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. That would be good. Have we got a caller on the line one, bud? I'll do that real quick before I jump in. Line one, Sparky. Is that Sparky? Sparky from Harvest. How you doing, man?
Hey, happy Friday to you and Boomer.
Yes, sir. You too.
I was listening to your last topic and anticipating the next one. I mean, there's a direct correlation between the two topics. The frustration that most of us responsible, law-abiding taxpayers feel with the realization that there's a two-tiered system of justice perpetrated out of Washington, D.C., where crooks like Hunter Biden, crooks like Joe Biden, egregious crooks like Hillary Clinton, Eric Holder, and all these characters are never going to be prosecuted, are never going to be put in jail for crimes that would put you and I in prison forever. And with the aid and abetment of a mainstream media who gleefully normalize or hush away their criminal behavior. And they must be making so much money off of our tax dollars that they gleefully line their pockets with gold, knowing they're never going to go to jail. And they've got a profoundly anti-American, what you and I know as traditional Judeo-Christian, fairly conservative America. It's staggering that we don't have events like what they perceive January 6th on a daily basis, given the outrageous nature of their crimes and their attitudes about it.
Yeah,
using our tax dollars.
I think, Sparky, I think one of the ones that quickly comes to mind is here we are looking at the former president of the United States, a political candidate for president again, Donald Trump, has his home raided allegedly because there are classified documents in his possession that he should not have otherwise had, even though he could have declassified them. While at the same time, we know for a fact that Hillary Clinton had a private server at her home filled with classified emails, and they took a hammer to it and destroyed the hard drive rather than turn it over, and ain't nobody said boo about it ever since.
No, and how much training did you suffer in your time in the Army on cyber awareness and protection of classified information materials? You and I know if we sent one wrong email or took one document and mishandled it, we'd be thrown out of the Army. We'd do a year or two in Leavenworth, and we would be completely hosed. And these people are so smug and arrogant, and they know they're always going to get away with it. Very frustrating to those of us who know better.
Well, and you are so right, man. And you know, if you remember right, there was a kid, a young submariner, who took pictures on his cell phone because he was proud of the submarine that he was on and posted them to his social media, and he got excoriated, and I think he got a dishonorable discharge and maybe even some prison time at the same time that Hillary Clinton's server was considered a questionable issue and no standards being held across the board there.
Absolutely. I think if you've ever met a conservative who was pretty gleeful in 2016 when Hillary lost the election that was hers, she expected it. She knew it was hers. I think that's about the only justice we're ever going to get with a criminal like Hillary Clinton, was knowing that she was egregiously, unbelievably unhappy for losing the election that she had been told was hers.
Yeah.
That she was guaranteed
yeah.
with hers. And that sounds very unchristian and snarky and petty of me and those of us who took great glee in her loss. But it was what it was. It's the only justice we're ever going to see for that woman, and indeed the entire Clinton crime family.
And not just glee at the moment, but satisfaction the thereafter. Can you imagine if she had been president over the next 4 years thereafter? I mean, the things we went through. I mean, good Lord. Wow.
Oh, yeah. You think the FBI and the Department of Justice were getting away with murder leading into her protecting her status? Well, actually they have, and they've gotten worse, so... I don't know. It would have been worse, I think.
Sparky, thanks for the call, buddy. Appreciate you.
Happy weekend.
You too, bud. All right. Hey, listen, we'll keep watching. If we have to break over to a story on it, what we know right now and what kind of sparked the conversation with Sparky. You like the way I did that? What sparked the conversation with Sparky in part was the fact that I just announced a moment ago that it appears that Elon Musk has a trove of documents. I mean... Old boy's been going through the house, you know what I'm saying? He bought the house, and the previous tenant just left everything where it was. He's been opening up the bedroom closets and looking in the dresser drawers and finding stuff left and right. And he tweeted out the other day that he basically said that Twitter was guilty of electioneering in the 2020 elections. And he said, announced today, if you didn't hear me say it earlier, that at 4 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock Eastern, that all of the documents related to the Hunter Biden suppression, laptop suppression at Twitter will be released. And, man, I can't wait. Text line, Jerry from Meridianville, to the things that Sparky just said, amen, Sparky. So, Sparks, there you go. You got some. And John from Huntsville says, I never fail to make him hungry. So, talk about Just Love Coffee. All right. Let me ask you this. Number two of the Triple Dipper. The anti-U.S. agenda. Let's talk from a historical perspective. You know, next to the United States, and well, I take it back. I mean, you might look at the great British Empire at the height of its reach, but the Roman Empire, the Ottoman Empire, there are several over time which have truly been empires, and of course, Rome sort of sets the standard. Rome during its time. Conquered what was called the known world, and yet it went away. I mean, why? How do you get that big, and then just stop? Well, historians truly believe that the majority of what happened to the Roman Empire happened as a result of policies from within, and there were external factors, but it was the internal policies that allowed the external factors to have their sway. So Victor Davis Hanson wrote a piece that I'm going to get into here in a few minutes, and it's called, If You Really Want to Destroy the U.S., Then, and he lists the things you could do. Funny, a lot of them are already happening. Before I do that, what I want to go into is a piece that I've got that literally explains the reasons why Rome fell. Historians say, to some level of agreement or at least acknowledgement, these are the things that we think caused the fall of Rome. And we'll break this down, because the reasons why Rome fell, you can sort of see them now. So I'll tell you what, Boomer, we're about a minute ahead of schedule. Let's go ahead and take the break now. That'll be a great way to come right back in and jump right into this. So we'll take the break right now. I'll come right back. Number two of the Triple Dipper on a Friday afternoon, the anti-U.S. agenda. The fall of Rome, does it compare? Yeah, I think it does. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plane right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, real quickly, I will tell you that on the text line, Kimball from Harvest has said Elon Musk's timing of the release of the Biden documents is really interesting. The last business day of the week in Washington, little time to spend. The swamp is going to have to bite its fingernails over the weekend. It should be interesting to see what the administration says on Monday morning. Yeah, and I'll be honest, I'll be also waiting to see, Kimball, if Musk is already being scheduled to make the Sunday talk show circuit. We'll find out. But there's that. And New York Post has already got a story up about it, among others. But New York Post, I went to theirs because they were the ones who had the laptop story and had themselves had their entire platform was suppressed. But they say, yeah, Elon Musk says he will release the details on Friday afternoon about Twitter's decision to censor the Post's scoop about Hunter Biden's infamous laptop. The tweet actually said, what really happened with the Hunter Biden story suppression by Twitter will be published on Twitter today at 5 p.m. Eastern, followed by a second tweet from Musk saying, this will be awesome. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah, I'm curious. All right. That being said, I also just had a text a moment ago. Oh, where was it? Somebody was saying that they understood. It was Craig from Gardendale, the man who called the FBI about the laptop, who followed the law, to my understanding, is being harassed. And, yeah, I've heard that before, too, Craig. You're right. All right, listen, let me jump over to number two of the Triple Dipper. Time now, 350. That's 1550 for all you green suitors out there at Redstone Arsenal. Okay. Eight reasons why Rome fell. Listen, you got to look at history, and sometimes, if you know the old saying, if you don't pay attention to your history, you may be doomed to repeat it. Let me break down some of the reasons why there is a belief that much of what happened to bring down the Roman Empire happened from within. All right. One of the reasons it cites in this article that I've got in front of me from history.com. Economic troubles and over-reliance on slave labor. Now, keep in mind, some of these things have to be parallels. They're not direct, but they're correlations here that can be made. Number one, there is a real reason to believe that taxation and inflation hampered the economic development of Rome's empire, and the economy began to tank. When the economy began to tank, of course, then it has second and third order effects. One of the other things that happened, though, was the people of Rome themselves became disinterested in working. So you said slave labor, Phil? Yeah. In other words, you couldn't pay them to go to work anymore. They just paid other people to do it for them. What are we seeing right now in society? What are we seeing right now? How about in the pandemic? I mean, right now, Alabama's unemployment rate is great, but the labor participation rate is awful. The labor participation rate clearly indicates that there are people to this day who have just chosen not to re-enter the labor force. They're not even looking for a job. How long did we go as a nation? Alabama got out earlier, and I'm glad. How long did we go as a nation, though, basically paying people more to stay home than they would have made if they'd just gone to work? But when they do that, then there's no widgets being made. The supply chain breaks down. Listen, the fall of Rome, historians believe that a big part of it was economic troubles and over-reliance on slave labor, meaning they were having economic difficulties and the labor participation rate was way down among Roman citizens. All right, next one, mass migration. What? Yes, I kid you not. There was zero control of their borders at some point, and as a result, a mass migration by the Huns and the barbarian tribes began to sweep across the borders. And without any border controls whatsoever, the mass migration began to weaken Rome from within. They could not sustain the influx of new citizenry who did not answer to the higher call to be a citizen of the empire, who didn't pay taxes, who didn't participate in actually growing the empire. They were there to basically leech off of it. And so a mass migration of the Huns and Germanic tribes literally caused a surge. In fact, I'm looking at it right now, it says a surge across its borders and then to even occupy places like Britain, Spain, and North Africa. And that was considered one of the downfalls of the Roman Empire, was they could no longer control their borders. They didn't have good border policy. And there was a mass migration of humanity across their borders that they couldn't sustain once it got there. Interesting. what's happening on our southern border right now? Oh, that's right, mass migration. Don't kid yourself. This is not these are not illegal immigrants. This is a mass migration. When you've got literally last month alone, we had 73,000 gotaways, just gotaways. And those other, by the way, when they say it's a gotaway, it's one they saw and chased and they couldn't catch them. We don't even know how many of those weren't seen. No control of the borders. Fall of Rome. What's the next one? Political polarization. What do I mean by that? Well, Rome at some point became so polarized that it literally split into two forms of governance, Eastern and Western empires, Constantinople and Byzantium, all right? They had two separate capitals. They squabbled constantly. Their political polarization drove them to the point that one side didn't care about the other side's business. They only wanted what was good for them. They didn't work anymore for the benefit of the empire. They worked for what was good for their party, in a sense. East versus West, in that case. Here, political polarization, you see it every day. You can't even get a true budget passed in D.C. They're constantly looking at overspending and constantly looking at infighting and constantly looking at things like the January 6th Commission and trying to drive a wedge, claiming that this is a pandemic on the unvaccinated, driving a wedge between people left and right. Political polarization in the Roman Empire was a part of what historians believe caused its downfall. How about this one? Overexpansion and military overspending. In other words, they built and they built till they could no longer sustain themselves. Well, you have to look at this in the comparison with where we are today in terms of we have built an economy, but that economy has requirements. And when you look at things like we're no longer maintaining energy independence, well, what we're doing is we have built something we can't sustain. We have to import our needs now. We are beyond what it takes to sustain what we have built, and they say that the very thing that I'm talking about in its day was a part of the downfall of the Roman Empire. How about this? A loss of traditional values. What? Yes. Now, the interesting thing is it was Christianity coming in and changing some things that caused a shift in values, but traditional values and Rome's longstanding history and traditions began to fall by the wayside. They no longer held to the things that had made them Rome. They no longer held to things like the idea of the Republic and the idea of what it meant to be a society that honored its I don't want to say honored its own self, but cared about its image, if you will, and stewarded itself well. No, the traditional values began to fall by the wayside. What are we looking at right now in the United States? I think it's far too similar. Far too similar. And then the last one that I'll point out before we hit the break. The weakening of the Roman legions. The weakening of the military. Interesting. Because in the end, when you face an adverse opponent from outside your borders, who's supposed to help you with that? Your military. And it says that Rome got to the point that it couldn't even recruit enough soldiers to the Roman, and they had to hire mercenaries. The once mighty legions, it said, began to change. It used to be that the Latin words barbarous were considered to be antithetical to good order, but they began to call their soldiers barbarous because they were filled up with German Goths and others that they had to throw in the ranks. They had a depleted military. They had a military that lacked good order and discipline, and they began to basically go by the wayside and no longer be able to defend themselves. What are we looking at right now? Recruiting's down 40%. Morale's in the tank. We just finished a 20-year war with an awful pullout that sacrificed more lives in the process. And we have a woke standard and a CRT push right now from higher down to the lower ranks. I'm just telling you, everything I just said to you was about the reasons why Rome fell. And if you don't watch your history, you're doomed to repeat it. Well, in a minute, we're going to get into the second half of this discussion. A piece written by Victor Davis Hanson, looking at not just why Rome fell, but what are we doing to ourselves right now with policies that, like, if you wanted to destroy the U.S., what would you do? Well, he lists it, and it's going to sound way too familiar. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. all you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios, local, state, national. We cover down on all the issues, man. And like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hour number three, Boomer. Wow.
Man,
where
I can't,
did this show go?
Last 2 hours. I don't have it.
There's no good answer for that.
There's a good answer.
Yeah, well, you know what? Time flies when you're having fun.
That's right.
All right, so listen, I just got a text, by the way. Chris from Madison, with regards to Rome, he said, hope your list also describes the debased appeasement and buy-off of the masses with games and entitlements to distract from the complete failure of government and enrichment of the elite. Wow. That was, good Lord. And I texted him back, and I said, well, that's going to get read on the air right after the break. To which he replied back, summarized as government corruption. Yep, you are so correct. Hey, listen, Victor Davis Hanson, somebody who's, God, I mean, every time I listen to him, kind of like talking about Matt Clark earlier, every time I listen to Victor Davis Hanson, I just feel like I gain something from it. He's just an extremely deep and solid intellectual, very conservative. And in fact, I love a book. We don't have this particular book up on my Right Side Radio recommended reading list on the website, rightsideradio.org. We don't have this book up, but I do recommend it. If you're a historian, if you're somebody who likes to read through the nuances of history and do some deep dives, he wrote a book called The Savior Generals. I believe it's five generals who he believes literally changed the course of a war by the sheer force of their own personality, their skill, their acumen, their experience. I mean, sometimes it's a variety of events. It's the civil, it's the military, it's the whole, you know, military complex, so to speak. He believes that there are some who, just because of that individual, you can say that they turned the tide. Anyway, Victor Davis Hanson, I love his stuff. He wrote a piece that came out in Town Hall yesterday, actually, kind of in the same vein of what I did a minute ago with the fall of Rome. The headline caught my attention. He says, if you really wanted to destroy the U.S., then, and he goes through the list of things you could do to destroy the U.S. Listen to what he says. Number one, surrender our prior energy independence. Yeah. He says, cut back on production right when the world needs you to be emerging from a two-year lockdown, make war on coal and nuclear power, drain the strategic reserves, cancel the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, oil and gas field, block pipelines like Keystone, overregulate, demonize frackers. Oh, wait, we're doing that already. All right. That's number one of what Victor Davis Hanson believes you could do to help destroy America. Number two, print trillions of dollars in the new currency as the end of lockdown, demand rises, and consumers are already saturated with COVID-19 subsidies, but keep interest rates low, well below the rate of inflation, while you print more money. Yeah. And then watch inflation go up to a 40-year high. But then make sure you spread the wealth out even to those who already have enough money. Keep giving them more. And then flooding the market with capability of spending, but yet not keeping up with demand for goods and services. And oh, by the way, pay them to stay home. All right? Oh, wait. We've been doing that. Huh. That's check one, check two. Those things are already happening. What's third on his list of things you could do to destroy the U.S.? How about ending America's physical boundaries? He says, end any vestigial difference between a citizen and a resident. Just basically say, if you're here, it's the same as being a resident. You're just here. You just go ahead and you know, just increase the population by a pure level of percentage by allowing anyone to cross over the border. Make it just kind of amorphous. anywhere you are, doesn't matter where you're from, you're here, we'll treat you like a citizen. There's no requirements of you. End America's physical boundaries. Yep. Yeah, seeing it already. This is almost depressing, but it's one of those things where you have to read it to be able to know it's there. Number four on Richter Davis Hanson's list of how to destroy the U.S., destroy public trust in elections. Oh, gosh. Yeah, well, okay, there you go. Render Election Day irrelevant. You know, that's why we have election month in some places or election seasons. Make proper auditing of 110 mail-in ballots impossible. Normalize ballot harvesting and ballot curing. Urge leftist billionaires to infuse their riches to absorb the work of state registrars. Blast election denialists as insurrectionists and democracy destroyers. Anyone who objects to the radical ballot changes, you must weaponize the government against them. Yeah, that sounds kind of familiar. That sounds kind of like a little too close to home. That sounds like, dadgummit, there it is. It's happening again. Number five on Victor Davis Hanson's list of things you could do to destroy the U.S., redefine crime as one rich man's crime is another poor man's necessity. What is he saying right there? What he's saying there is don't enforce the laws consistently across the board. If a poor person steals, just let them steal because they must have needed it. But if somebody who has means steals, well, by God, you throw the book at them. And so there's literal inconsistency in the manner in which laws are applied. And then, oh, by the way, just go ahead and turn a blind eye to crime in general while you're at it. Number six, junk the ossified idea of a melting pot and multiracial society united by common American values. Just instead, identify everybody by their superficial appearance. Seek to make them all victims and monetize their claims against their perceived victimizers and call anybody a racist who disagrees. Good Lord, where does that sound like? That sounds like life as we know it right now. That sounds like every week I do Adventures in Woke World, most of it involves just crap like that. How about this? Number seven on Victor Davis Hanson's list, render the United States nothing more than just another one of the nations abroad. We're not special. Why? We're not. There's no American exceptionalism. MAGA means make America great again. Listen, we can't do that. We're part of the United Nations. We're part of the homogenous group of nations. There's no identity here. We seek to be one. Screw that. Eight, neuter the First Amendment and let Silicon Valley monopolies silence unwarranted free speech by using big tech. There you go. Number nine, demonize half the country as semi-fascist, un-American insurrectionists, and even potential domestic terrorists. Just basically create divisions by labeling people and then throwing government at them. And then number 10, never mention the origins of the COVID-19 virus and make sure you never blame China for the release of the COVID-19 virus. And certainly don't hold any health officials accountable who may have helped subsidize Chinese gain-of-function research. And he points out everything he just said, and you know it. Y'all know it. I got an audience here that knows it as better or well as well as or better than I do. You know it. Everything I just said in there are things that are already happening. And it's amazing to watch. It's maddening to watch. And I'm telling you, folks, we can't sit idly by and just say, wow, that happened. No. It's not wow, that happened. It's wow, that's happening, but by God, it stops now. I mean, we're gonna have to get serious. And there's gonna have to be a more, and I don't want to say a seriousness about government, but you know what? How about we stop taking government less seriously and start taking it more seriously? How about we recognize that who you put in office and who they appoint to those offices actually does matter? Because the people who set policy need to be somebody who is policy serious. I want them to look at their jobs as not just that flight of fancy where I got to be a glass ceiling breaker, which we're going to cover some of that in a minute when we get into the next third dipper, cacistocracy. Because, oh, Lord God, there's a three-ring circus. There are times when I feel like, you know, looking up there at D.C. looks like the Hunger Games, and it's more like the Capitol than it is one of the outlying agencies or communities. Folks, I'm just telling you, what we saw in the fall of Rome is stuff that's happening now. What we're seeing in Victor Davis Hanson's article of what if he had to create a list of things he could use to destroy the United States, it's happening now. And I'm just, listen, I got a caller, bud. I'll do that. I'll tell you what. I'm on a rant. You better catch me right now. But I'll take that call before I start burning up my microphone here. Who's on line one? Is that Brian? Brian from Huntsville. How are you doing, man?
Doing well and just getting steamed over. He is absolutely accurate on so many areas, but I'm wondering if the number one keys to getting things into the situation that he's referring to is program the youth.
Wow. I can see that. I can see what you're saying. Yeah, make sure that the youth believe that all the things that we decided are things that are okay, and you're just going to live with it. Don't let them have any idea of exceptionalism or what it means to promote the United States that their parents and grandparents supported.
Well, thank you very much. You all take care.
Goodbye. All right. Good to hear from you, Brian. All right. Well, listen, on that depressing note, Boomer, let's take a break. We're going to come back in a minute, though. Cacistocracy. Oh, there's your word. There's your Scrabble word of the week. We're bringing it back. I've got a list of the yokels who are running government, and when we go down this list, it's going to boggle your mind because cacistocracy, a government run by the least competent members of society. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. I'm moving to number three of the Triple Dipper. Cacistocracy. Yeah, so cacistocracy. Listen, so JT from Lacey Springs just texted. Man, the text line blew up. I just realized I've got like eight or nine texts I hadn't gotten to yet. Paul from Athens, cacistocracy, he says, the works is full of it. Jim from Madison, cacistocracy is a Greek word. The Greeks fell to Rome in 146 B.C. like Carthage. JT from Lacey Springs says, when you say cacistocracy, I think of Andy Griffith's episode when Barney does a U-turn on Main Street and Gomer goes around yelling, citizens arrest, citizens arrest. It's that loony. I agree. All right, cacistocracy, if you're not familiar, is a word. It actually is that's a real word. Cacistocracy. I felt like I did a little jingle there, but cacistocracy is a word that literally means a government run by the least competent of its citizens.
Did you forget about this?
What's that?
You're traveling through another dimension.
Oh my god!
A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a dreary society governed by its least suitable citizens. You are now entering the cacistocracy zone.
Oh my gosh. I did not remember that you had done that. Holy cow. Well, listen, before I jump into the stuff that I've got here that's going to curl your hair, make you mad, roll your eyes, and all of it, let me take the call I've got on line two. Jeff from Indiana. Jeff Rowe, how are you doing today, man?
I'm sitting in traffic in Nashville. Wonderful, baby. Wow. Friday night.
Wow. On a Friday, there you are, locked down in traffic. Everybody's trying to go home at the same time.
Yes, they are.
Well, what can I do for you? What's on your mind, brother?
You know, cacistocracy could not exist if we didn't have voters who were even too stupid to put the people in there. That's the problem. It's not the people that's doing it. It's the people who's putting it in there are so misinformed and so ignorant, basically, and uncaring or whatever. They are truly a danger to this country.
Well, you know, and what irritates me, Jeff, I mean, and granted, democracy is what democracy is. I get it. People are going to vote for somebody I don't agree with. That's their right. But you know what happens, too, is some of this stuff could have been stopped because some of these cacistocracies are appointed and then confirmed by the Senate. And I've got multiple cases here where Republicans didn't have to, but they went ahead and confirmed somebody to a position just because Biden said so that never should have gotten the position. And that didn't have to happen.
Yeah. Poor Republicans, spineless Republicans are as dangerous as Democrats because they sit back and let this stuff happen and they don't put up a fight. They just go along to get along, I guess. And
Yeah, and then there's one whole caucus that is proud to call themselves the moderates, and I'm like, why are you proud? It's like saying, I'm squishy and I don't lean, you know, in a certain direction. I just go where the wind blows me. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, look at me, I'm mediocre.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I am. I'm gonna hide. I'm a middle achiever.
We call ourselves the lukewarm caucus.
There you go. The thing about the fall of the Romans and everything, you know, and the fall of this, I mean, let's face it, this country will fall at some point if things are let to go as they're trending right now.
Well,
when good men stand by and do nothing, you know, are they as much as fault as the people doing the things to us?
Yeah, well, you're right. That's what Edmund Burke, I believe, said, that the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing.
Exactly.
All right, Jeff, be careful on the road, buddy. You take care.
You have a good one, Phil.
You too, bud. All right, cacistocracy. So, listen, I'm going to start with the one that has gotten the most attention here lately. And this is the one that got me, you know, going on this entire theme. So I know that some of y'all are tracking this guy, Sam Brenton. So if you're not familiar, back in July of this year, there was a high-level hire at the Department of Energy. I have a story here from the National Pulse around that time. Biden's Energy Department drag queen gets top-secret Q clearance with a six-figure government salary. He had one of the highest government salaries you could have, $178,000 annual salary, to be a top-secret cleared Department of Energy person whose job was to oversee the disposal of nuclear waste. With a past history as a drag queen, a defender of underage gay prostitution, and also had been lecturing on kink at college campuses and participated in interviews about fetish role plays. And by the way, it's not like he looked like a normal guy who had some things he did in his personal life. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. He's a freak show. I mean, it's like he's the most demonstrative, let me try and be obnoxious in your face, I'm non-binary, I can do what I want, I'll wear my high heels and women's clothes and bright lipstick with my pale face and bald head, and it's off-putting. I mean, you look at him, and you feel like you're looking at somebody who's playing dress-up in life, and they're really not taking life serious. And oh, by the way, he's got so many things in his life that, listen, I had a SCI clearance. I worked on SAP programs. I know what it means to be in a position where you can be you can be basically considered to be a risk and lose your clearance simply because you have things in your life. They look to see whether or not you ever filed bankruptcy. They want to know whether you're overextended on your bills. They want to know whether or not you've ever cheated on your wife. And they've got this guy getting a clearance? Well, it gets better. So that happened in July. And apparently what happened a few months later was old Sam Brenton was traveling at an airport. He decided to go ahead in Minneapolis when he spotted a very attractive suitcase. A suitcase, by the way, I think it was a Gucci, worth $2,300 on the baggage carousel that was not his, and it was filled with women's clothes. So he took it. Surveillance cameras show him removing the name tag from it, and he took it because he wanted it, because it was fancy. And it had all of the right clothes inside of it. And so Sam Brenton, the first ever glass-ceiling, non-binary, highly paid, top-secret security clearance guy who's in charge of our nuclear waste, has now been charged with felony theft and is currently on a leave of absence. And currently the Biden administration, according to today's story on Fox News, will not confirm whether or not he's coming back to work or not. This is what happens when you hire people in a cacistocracy. This is what happens when merit and true qualifications for the job don't matter. Oh, I got a stack of these. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey, all you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And here we And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. I'm talking about this show goes way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden. We got parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. And hey, listen, within all of that territory I just cited, by the way, ZLA Solutions is working right now to put people back to work. So if you're looking for a job, let me just tell you, ZLA Solutions at their website, ZLAUSA.com, they've got jobs posted all over North Alabama now. Big-name employers. I mean, literally, if you want a job, the jobs are out there. And ZLA is one of the best at connecting people to those jobs. But here's the thing. They can help businesses with a lot of stuff. I mean, they can do your quality control. They can help you with sorting and containment, shipping, logistics, all that kind of stuff. But one of their bread-and-butter items is helping employers fill out the ranks of their workforce. So if you're looking for people, if you need people like onesies and twosies, niche positions, they can find them. If you need like a whole shift of people, they can find them. They can do the recruiting, the background checks, the drug testing. They can basically get all that off your back and staff you up. ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. Check them out and tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. All right, I'm in the Kekistocracy segment. Boomer, you want to play that again, man? I think it's worth it. I think you just need to play it. Play it.
You're traveling through another dimension, a dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind, a journey into a dreary society governed by its least suitable citizens. You are now entering the Kekistocracy Zone.
It's creepy. It's true. All right. So Kekistocracy, the word alone should tell you something's up, but Kekistocracy is a word that literally means, and by the way, my secretary is the one who gave me that. One day she wrote it down, she goes, here, you might need this, and she handed it to me, and I was like, that's genius. And I went and looked it up. It's a real word. It basically means a government run by the least competent of its citizens, or like I said a minute ago, the least suitable of its citizens. We just did a minute ago Sam Brenton, who now is apparently pending charges for felony theft. Never mind the way that he was a freak show anyway. He had no business having the job that he has or had. I don't know, on leave of absence from. How about this one? In July of this year, American Military News was the source that I pulled that said that the Senate had just confirmed Stephen Dettelbach as the head of Biden's ATF. So the ATF, what do? They enforce the nation's gun laws. Stephen Dettelbach admitted he's never owned a gun. So the head of the ATF has never owned a gun or, for that matter, been issued a gun in any of his positions. He's been a career prosecutor. He joined the Department of Civil Justice, Civil Rights Division in 1992, worked as a trial lawyer in the criminal section. Literally, I got to say, okay, you're like, well, Phil, I mean, does he have to have a gun in his possession to be able to enforce the laws? Well, let me ask you something. What do you think his leanings are at this point? Would you go and buy, let's say you're going to grill steaks. Are you going to buy steaks from a vegan? I leave that out there for your consumption, no pun intended. Are you going to buy steaks from a vegan? Do you want the guy who is enforcing the laws of the ATF, the enforcing laws through the ATF, to be a guy who in his entire lifetime has never owned a gun? What does that tell you about him? What does this indicate? It clearly indicates that he's probably got a predisposition that goes against gun owners. That's my thinking. And yet now the Senate has confirmed Stephen Dettelbach, career prosecutor, civil rights guy, never owned a gun, enforcing gun laws as the head of the ATF. How about this? Alejandro Mayorkas, Secretary of Department of Homeland Security, was confirmed. And, you know, it's a cabinet-level position. Secretary Mayorkas was confirmed to head up the Department of Homeland Security. He's had a long career working with the Obama administration, the Clinton administration, and now with the Biden administration. He was at one time the youngest U.S. attorney ever appointed. That was by Clinton. He is literally in charge of our homeland security, which includes our southern border. Huh. What should we expect in a kakistocracy from the guy who's in charge of border control? Oh, I don't know. Maybe we look back to his time when he was the undersecretary of DHS under Obama, and he was the author of what became known as the DACA program, the one that would give amnesty to hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens. He's the one that pretty much wrote that one up. He had the whole pathway to citizenship and everything just kind of laid out because that's who he is. What else do we know about him? Well, aside from the fact that he is currently, you know, still acting with regards to his feelings on amnesty and protecting dreamers from deportation, he also has a history of promoting sanctuary city development. Interesting. And he's in charge in the kakistocracy of the Department of Homeland Security, which has the Customs and Border Patrol, which is in charge of our border, which is in complete chaos right now. Should we expect any different? I mean, what result were we hoping to get? When the Senate joined with the Democrats, when the Senate Republicans joined with the Democrats to agree to put Mayorkas in charge of DHS, because that was a confirmation position, what did they think was going to happen when the guy who wrote DACA, who protects dreamers because, you know, they're not here illegally or anything, and for that matter, has promoted sanctuary cities, what did we think was going to happen? We're getting exactly what he lives for. This is who he is. And in a kakistocracy, why put somebody in charge of the border who cares about border control? No, it's a kakistocracy, man. Go find the guy who doesn't like borders. Go find the guy who literally says, hey, you know what? I'm for amnesty and sanctuary cities. Wow. I mean, and then, of course, you know, make sure, too, when you hire a guy to be the head of the ATF, find somebody who doesn't like guns and has never even owned one. Like buying steak from a vegan. All right, I got a caller on line four. Let me grab that before the break. Lee from Huntsville. Hey, Lee, how you doing?
I am good. Right side ranger here.
Yeah.
You're doing well?
I'm doing well. I'm well. Happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday. I've got a few suggestions for some positions.
All right.
Personally, I'd like to nominate myself for Attorney General. I'm not an attorney, but I binge watch Matlock, one of my favorite things.
There
I mean,
you go.
You know, I mean, what the heck more do you need?
I mean, that's qualification for me.
I could dress like an attorney. I could dress like an attorney, you know, put on an ugly pantsuit, and there I am. I think that you would be a fantastic Surgeon General.
Me?
You're not a physician, but I mean, you're level-headed, and I think you could watch some YouTube videos and be pretty confident, personally.
You know, there's an instruction manual somewhere, I'm sure.
You can YouTube just about anything, honestly. And I think Boomer would be fantastic. Is there like a communications department? Because he's good on the phone. He's friendly.
Well,
I mean, I think it would all work, personally. Because if a dude can clickety-clack around the halls of Congress in his heels and consider himself competent for anything besides the nut house, then we all can do whatever the heck we want because we all stayed in the Holiday Inn Express last night.
There you go. We had to get the Holiday Inn Express piece in there because that's exactly the qualification for virtually everything. And by the way, Boomer's all in. He wants to replace Karine Jean-Pierre as the press secretary.
Well, I mean, a toad could replace that one. and still burp up a sound. Yeah.
Lee, when are you going to guest host the show for me?
Anytime you want. I'm always available.
All right, Lee, you have a great weekend. Thank you.
You too.
Boomer, you're the press secretary now.
Press secretary.
I'm saying, just take it, brother. Run with it.
Take it and run with it.
And by the way, there's nowhere to go but up in that job right now.
I know. I got a couple texts that I wanted to tell you.
Yeah.
One of them was, man, just talking about all the kakistocracy and someone saying, wow, this just makes me sick, and how the nation is just, it's being run by people like that. And
yeah.
And also, it's like, man, we need to get Right Side nationwide so people can hear y'all.
I'm for that.
Me too. I love that idea.
I'm for that. Let's make it happen. JT from Lacey Springs has texted in, by the way. If I can get over to the text line here. He says, the ATF fellow, it's kind of like a minister never owning a Bible. Wow. Hey, that's... You know, I liked my vegan steak guy, but he's it's a great point. Like a minister never owning a Bible. All right. Jim from Madison says, for better or worse, Sam Brenton did earn a master's in nuclear engineering from MIT. He's a recognized expert in the field. Maybe his or her brain just got fried around all that waste, but you can't deny his or her expertise. Okay, Jim. Yes, I can. I can deny his or her expertise because sometimes his or her expertise has to be qualified in a way that makes it applicable, usable, and, amenable to the job. And he does not. He did not in any way intone leadership. He didn't have any management skills. He was a flamboyant activist who was given the job to break a glass ceiling. I don't care what kind of degree he has. You know what? A degree in underwater basket weaving. I don't care. But MIT or not, you can have all the degrees in the world and still be an idiot. There you go. All right, let's go and take the break, Boomer. We'll take the break right now. We'll come back and wrap this up. Who's next? I mean, I got a stack up. We won't even get to all of them probably. Rachel Levine. Oh, there's that one. Jennifer Granholm, U.S. Energy Secretary. She's all about sustainables. How about Department of Education? Secretary Gardonia, Pete Buttigieg took paternity leave 2 months into the supply chain crisis. It just keeps getting better. Don't forget, by the way, Benghazi ain't going away. Neither Susan Rice. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid, conservative, just plain right. Hey, before I go any further, I got to quickly tell you, like my friends at Riley and Jackson have been just tearing it up. They are my friends, by the way. I know these folks personally. I've worked with them on issues. I've worked with them on cases. Riley and Jackson, a law firm based in Birmingham but working statewide, they wanted me to make sure that I covered down on the fact that if you're one of those who was at Camp Lejeune, between the years 1953 and 1987, that you may well have been exposed to contaminants, confirmed contaminants in the water supply there that has caused like upwards of 19 different illnesses. And they have got a number of Right Side listeners who are now their clients because we've been announcing it. So there's that. But they also let me know the other day, they said, hey, Phil, since your folks have been so responsive to you talking about our firm, you might want to tell them, too, that we're also working on another case regarding firefighting foam. So if you've been a firefighter or in the military using firefighting foam, you may well have been exposed to contaminants that are carcinogenic in a firefighting foam that is no longer in use, I believe. But while it was, it's considered to have been highly carcinogenic. And they are working right now with people all over the state to basically do what they do best, which is make people whole who have been aggrieved by the negligence of others. And they've got decades of experience doing it. So listen, they're my friends. They're a legit law firm. They are the heat, man. And they are, I like to say, they're not just good on the law. They're also good on politics, too, if you know what I'm saying. Riley and Jackson, you can find them at 205-879-5000. That's Riley and Jackson, 205-879-5000. No representation is made that the quality of legal services is greater than the quality of legal service performed by other lawyers. There you go. You forgot.
Woo.
I just did that. I didn't even look at notes, man. I just did that.
I know.
Just shabam.
That was impressive.
I don't know about impressive, but it happened. if that's all it takes to impress, then I got nowhere to go but up now. Speaking of nowhere to go but up, let's wrap up this cacistocracy. Woo! Wow. Okay, so Sam Brenton still takes the cake. I mean, he's the weirdest duck in the whole flock, but the other one is just stand. You know what, Boomer? I tell you what, we got an audio clip. Let's do this. I'm gonna talk about. I even hesitate to call Richard Levine Rachel, but I guess you can change your name legally. But go ahead and get clip one ready for me, bud, with Tucker Carlson and Adam Carolla. They were talking about this very thing last night. But you know, have you seen Admiral Levine? Loves to wear the dress and the uniform. Admiral Levine. is a openly transgender individual, a dude who believes he's a woman, who is loves to wear his admiral's uniform, and is now in charge of you know, the Department of Health and Human Services. And so as the got the appointment and basically comes in and has made certain statements like, there's no argument among medical professionals, pediatricians or otherwise, about the value and importance of gender-affirming care. Well, there absolutely is an argument. This is an egregious falsehood. National Review points it out in an article back in May of this year. But it goes on to talk about the fact that why would you expect anything less from someone who is openly transgender except to try and affirm his own transgender situation by affirming that everyone else should go ahead and get on board? I mean, what do we think was going to happen? There was a great clip last night. So Tucker was talking to Adam Carolla, and I kept waiting for him to use the word cacistocracy because that's what they're doing. But Boomer, I'll tell you what, clip one, go ahead and play it.
Adam Carolla is a great dancer, also host of the Adam Carolla Show, joins us tonight. So Adam Carolla, it's a great country, but the deeper you look at the people who are actually running it, the more you get the sense this is all sort of some kind of elaborate SNL sketch where they put literally the dumbest people in the world in charge of the best country.
Well, let's not forget Admiral Levine, because, I mean, you have to picture Admiral Levine and the guy in charge of the spent uranium, and picture what North Korea, Russia, or Iran are thinking about this country when they see a picture of those two standing next to each other. It's all a diversity hire, and this is a problem. And people get a lot of crap for talking about diversity hires. It's great to have a diverse group, but that can't be the only criteria we use for hiring people in super important positions. You could never do that with a sports franchise. You know, Kamala Harris, what would you hire her to do? I wouldn't hire her to manage a Color Me Mine in Burbank, California, much less be the vice president of the United States.
Well, it's a little bit weird.
Okay. It goes on from there. It gets better. In fact, he points out, how many of these people, if you had to take, let's say, Admiral Levine and say, we're going to put him in charge of a nuclear submarine. Whoa, hey, stop, no. Or he points out, what if you took Janet Yellen and said, we're going to make her in charge of Nabisco Corporation. Nabisco, she'd run it in the ground. But she's in charge of the Federal Reserve. And then you look at things like, okay, how about Jennifer Granholm? Jennifer Granholm is our U.S. Senate, our U.S. Energy Secretary. Department of Energy Secretary Granholm has a long history of climate activism. What did we think was going to happen when we helped confirm her? When we gave this confirmation to the Biden administration, and I get it, presidents get to pick who they want, and I've heard some say, we just need to stand by and let them have who they want. This cacistocracy is being run by people that came into office with an activist mentality, whose behavior outside the office shouldn't even qualify them in some cases. And in this case, Secretary Granholm, as we're looking at being, you know, energy dependent again and not having a climate policy, energy policy over a climate policy, and looking at where she's been, she has been literally one of those activists in the private sector working so hard to get us to the point of green energy, Green New Deal, and now she's in charge of the Department of Energy. What did we think was going to happen? How about some of the others we've got? I mean, the stack that I've got, I don't know if I can even get to it all. Pete Buttigieg, Secretary of Department of Transportation. How's that supply chain thing going on? Not that great. Well, yeah, last year he took a 2-month paternity leave so that he and his partner could adopt a child. 2 months in the middle of the supply chain crisis. Just gone. You know, never mind. And then, of course, don't forget that somewhere in the background is Susan Rice. Basically, I think she's the puppeteer, if you get down to it. Susan Rice, one of the architects of the response to the Benghazi disaster. And there she is, one of the senior advisors to President Biden. I'm pretty sure she's also in the background making things happen. What a week, Boomer.
It's been a week. It's been awesome.
It's been an awesome week. Listen, we appreciate this audience. We can't do it without you. Y'all are amazing. Have a great weekend. Boomer and I back here Monday at 2. We'll see you then. Ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.